Chef Paul Prudhomme changed the American food world forever with his creative, exuberant love for Creole and Cajun food. He was the first American chef to take the reins at Commander's Palace, where the world first had a taste of his culinary genius. He pioneered the now commonplace farm-to-table movement as he championed Louisiana's farmers and fishermen. Here's what Ella Brennan told me about him.
He's one of the most natural cooks you'll ever find. It's in him. I talk about magic in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
They either have it or they don't. And what do I mean by that? It's what they're going to put in. I mean, it's the seasoning. It's the selection of the dish to begin with, the raw material, what are they going to serve. And if they have this magic in their hands, they can take this wonderful dish and wow.
But Paul had magic in his heart as well. No one knows that better than Chef Frank Brightston and his sister-in-law, Sandy Hansen. Here they are to tell us tales previously untold about the great chef, Paul Prudhomme.
You know, Paul and Kay are responsible for me being who I am and where I am, and for Sandy and her sisters, us all being together. Sandy is one of the three sisters that led the charge, you know. She came to New Orleans first, and then Rhonda followed later, and then Marna came to visit one Christmas, and we fell in love. So here we are, 30 years later.
What a wonderful, wonderful story, and it all intersects with Paul and Kay. Sandy, you and I were sitting together, actually, at Paul's funeral, and that's when you began to tell me the most amazing tale. Tell me about how you met Kay, Paul's wife, and how the two of you came to work together.
Well, it's a long, strange story, but we had both arrived in town near the same time, and we were actually working at the Dungeon, which was a key club in the French Quarter, one of those places that opened at midnight. So that was the late 60s. That was like 1967. I had just come from North Dakota not too long ago, and she was Miss Miles City, Montana. So we realized we had that in common, and so we came good friends over that, and then we became roommates and worked a bunch of different places in the quarter. She worked at La Strada on the corner of Bourbon, and I worked at Joanne Clevenger's little bar next door called Andy's, which was a little French Quarter bohemian bar. And so through the late 60s, we were buddies and ran the quarter, and that was our beginning.
That's there. A very special time. What a special time in the New Orleans French Quarter that was. So when did you meet Paul?
Well, it was very fortuitous how Paul and I met. I was 24 years old, and I was without a job, an apartment, and a car. And so I moved back in with my folks. And after a couple of weeks of that, I realized I had to do something. So I picked up the classified ads, and there was an ad for Commander's Palace. This was 78. And it said, now hiring Creole cooks or people willing to learn Creole cuisine. That struck a chord with me. At that point in my life, I decided I wanted to, you know, work in kitchens for a profession. And I wanted to learn. So I got Mom to drive me down for an interview at Commander's, and there was a lot of people applying, and I had a 1 hour interview with Paul, and at the end of it, he said, okay, good, come back next week and we'll talk again. So I came back the second week. There was a few less applicants, and they were, in hindsight, culling applicants. And we talked for another hour. And he said, okay, great, Frank, come back next week and we'll talk again. So I came back a third time and we talked for another hour. And he said, we're going to give you a chance, but you have a choice. We'll hire you as a broiler cook here at Commander's and pay you a good wage and expect a lot out of you. Or you can start as an apprentice in the pantry making salads and making very little money, but you can expect a lot out of me. So that's what I chose. Although I had been in food service through my college years, that was really the beginning of my culinary career. And I worked 6 months at Commander's, every station in the house. So it was really my culinary education. And after 6 months, he asked me if I wanted to go to Cape Paul's, which I had never heard of. They had been open for lunch for a few months. They wanted to open for dinner, as it turns out. So I just said, yes, chef, you know, whatever you want me to do. So that's when I went down to Charter Street and met Sandy.
Well, one of the astounding things that I learned from you, Sandy, that fateful day in the cathedral, was that you were one of two people, it was basically you and Kay, who were there the day Kay Paul's opened up. Tell us about the opening of that restaurant and that day and what happened.
Well, actually, to go back to a few days before that, I was working at a little place on Decatur Street called Parker's. It's where the French Market is now, and they had a little piano player there, and, you know, you'd get drinks. I was working there, and all of a sudden, I saw somebody knocking on the window inside, and I looked, and it was Kay Prudhomme. And I went out, and she said, I got to tell you something. She said, we found this little spot. It's on Charter Street, and she said, we want to open up a little joint. Paul's going to get us a few specials together. You can work the floor. I'll work the bar. We'll, you know, take a lot of time off. We'll work, and then we'll take a lot of time off. And she said, can you do it? And, of course, I was already working. I said, well, I'll come this, this is going to be the next week they were going to open. And I said, well, I'll come and help you open up and see what happens, you know. So it was July 3rd, 1979. And it was Kay's mom, Kay's dad, and me, and Kay. And we, you know, we were in the front all scurrying around and wiping the tables and took those cheap little napkins, you know, the napkin thing, and put them on each plate with a fork on each one and opened up the doors. And Kay's dad was tending bar, and her mom was kind of, you know, helping bus tables, and Kay was behind the bar, and it was me. So it was the four of us. So the first day we did, you know, a few people, and then the second day, a lot of those same people came back and brought, you know, other people. Yeah, we just opened the doors and let it rip.
So at what point do you show up there?
I believe they had been open about 8 months and had developed a strong, you know, local business lunch sort of crowd. Just Monday through Friday for lunch, and now they wanted to open for dinner. So we did that. I would come in about 10:30, and I was just learning how to cook, mind you. I'd come in about 10:30, and Chef Paul and I would go over the lunch menu, and then he would leave to go to Commander's, his real job, and I would do lunch service with Miss Thelma, and her daughter Cheryl was our dishwasher. And then after lunch, I'd clean up the stove, break down the line, and Chef would call me. We had a little wall phone by the stove where I learned a lot of recipes over the phone. And he would call me in the afternoon and would make the dinner menu literally at 2 in the afternoon, see what was left from lunch and what else we wanted to add, what was fresh that day. And I did dinner service by myself with a dishwasher for a while. And as it got busier, he brought in helpers for me, namely Jeffrey Rode, George Rode's younger brother. He'd come help me after school. He was in high school. Then his sister Glynis started to come in after school. And after about 3 months, his contract was up with the Brennans, and he came over to Cape Paul's full time, and then things really took off. I mean, we grew from 30 or 40 covers a night to 80, 90, 100, 120.
So the line starts forming out on Charter Street. What did that little kitchen look like? Because it was kind of a little postage stamp, wasn't it?
It was a dump. you know, the business there when Kay and Paul took it over was the Austin Inn, which was just like a bar and grill. And, maybe some other activities. And so the kitchen was tiny. There was a 6-burner stove, a steam table, and a fryer. You could hardly turn around. It had a very ancient window AC unit that went out 11 times in one lunch period, I remember distinctly. So we were just improvising, you know. We had a mismatched collection of old pots and pans, and the china was just mixed-matched stuff. There was nothing new in the place. And that was really the magic of what happened on Charter Street. Everything was on the fly. The menu making, that was our modus operandi for years. We'd make the dinner menu after lunch, you know, at 1:30, 2 in the afternoon, and then we had a couple hours to go produce it. And that's the way we did things. And so it was a very wild, adventurous time.
We were the Wild West. I mean, it was crazy. We were, well, first of all, the first group of waitresses, first 5-6 women that worked there, we had a tremendous bond, and we still do to this day. We were so close, and we had so much fun, and we were constantly laughing, and it carried over to the customers. I mean, we'd insult people, but with love, you know. In fact, if people came in and they felt like they didn't get, you know, kind of insulted or you know, played with a little bit, they would feel like they missed out on something. I mean, you know, here would be people from CNN interviewing Paul back there. He'd be aligned to get his autograph cookbook. You know, here's celebrities up at the bar. You know, here's Jerry Garcia standing in line, and it's raining outside. I mean, you know, come on. And we're just running around like crazy. It was so much fun. It was just a barrel of laughs.
And another sort of unconventional thing, other than the typical experience at a lunch counter, usually you can kind of pick who you're going to eat with, but there was none of that going on there either.
Oh, no. Everybody sat with everybody, and that would include, you know, celebrities. I can remember one time there was a table of 6, and it was this little couple. They were probably from Iowa, and another couple, and then it was Dave Burns from
Talking Heads.
So, and you know, I don't think they knew until they left. The little couple from Iowa said to me, she said, you know, those nice young men, they have a band, and they invited us to their show tonight. And isn't that sweet of them? And I thought, well, wait till they get home and tell their grandkids that the Talking Heads gave them tickets to see their little band playing, you know. And that was part of the fun of it. Everybody would meet people and just this totally unconventional, you know, people from different walks of life meeting each other. It was that was really part of the fun of it.
Look at that kitchen and all of that food. Look at them eating. I guess it tastes real good.
You know, I have been very blessed in my life, and I owe everything to Paul and Kay. But back then, this was before Paul started writing cookbooks. We didn't have any recipes, nothing. And this was how Creole cuisine was passed from generation to generation through the restaurants and homes of New Orleans. And I got to work with the greatest Creole chefs you've never heard of, like Raymond Sutton, Stanley Jackson, Armand Jante, who went on to have restaurants here in New Orleans, Leroy Thomas. These are the guys and gals that mentored me. And once K. Paul's got busy, we opened upstairs. So we were doing lunch and dinner upstairs and down. We had 2 kitchens with 4 shifts running, no recipes. Every day, before we opened, we all, as cooks, had to bring a sample of what we made that day to chef's table to get tasted. And if it wasn't right, we fixed it. But the beauty of Chef was he understood how to give you your freedom. your creative freedom. If it tasted good, it's good. Let's roll with it. My sauce piquante was totally different from the other chefs. There's many roads to get to the same place. And it's really a lesson in diversity. And that's what I'm grateful for.
So then the fateful day comes when you and Marna have married now and y'all are all down at Kay Paul's together, and Kay and Paul sit you down, Frank, and tell you it's time for you to go. Now, how'd that conversation happen?
Yeah, I mean, who would have thunk? My last year at Kay Paul's, Chef pulled me out of the kitchen and he put me in purchasing. And in hindsight, I realized now that he was prepping me to go out on my own. And literally one day, he and Kay were at Paul's little table in the rear of the dining room, and they asked me to come out and sit down. And Paul said verbatim, "We think you're ready to go out on your own." And, you know, I didn't know what to expect. I just said, okay. And they enabled us to open Brightson's. And by enabling, I mean they gave me everything I needed. They set me up with a CPA, an attorney, two of the best in the world, a real estate agent. And it took a few weeks, but I found the spot. And then they came up with $120,000 out of their pocket. They wanted Brightson's probably more than I did. And so Chef negotiated the deal for me. We signed the lease, the business deal. And he said, "Here's your last paycheck. Good luck. You better open quick." So I knew what that meant. So we went to work, and we got the keys to this building, and we opened 5 days later.
And Sandy, you came along too?
Well, I did. However, Kay did not want me to leave. You know, I was her right hand, you know. She said, "You really, you know," she said, "let your family go, let them go up there, let them get started, and then maybe 8 months to a year, then you can go up. Then when there's some gravy there, you can go up." She said, you know, she did everything she could. So I said, "I'm going to let my family, you know, I've been in the restaurant business, I'm going to let my family open up a restaurant without me." I said, no, I've got to be part of this, you know. So we all came. We all came, and we were here, like Frank said, 5 days. We got everybody, his mom, everybody we knew out here, scraping and painting, and 5 days later, boom. It was amazing. And the neighbors here didn't dream we could do it. They, "What's going on?" They said, "Oh, we're opening a restaurant." I went, "Oh, okay." And people next door at Ballin's, they couldn't believe it. Yeah. "I'm sure you're going to open a restaurant." And boy, were they surprised.
and what a restaurant you opened. And of course, it just follows to reason that you must have, on occasion, had some VIP customers. Did Paul and Kay dine here much?
Well, they were here opening night. I remember that. Opening day in a restaurant is indescribable. In terms of stress and pressure. And I remember one of the dishes that I wanted to do was panned rabbit parmesan, like we do veal parmesan. So I made the marinara sauce that day, and I didn't like it. The canned tomatoes I was using was a brand I had never used before, and I didn't like the sauce at all. So at 4 o'clock, I called Kay Paul's and I asked Don LeBlanc to send me over a can of those tomatoes that I'm used to in a cab, which he did. He sent a can of tomatoes over in a United cab. I remade the sauce. Well, guess what Chef Paul ordered that night? Mm. Panade rabbit parmesan. So after he ate, he came back to the kitchen, and this was a part of his sense of humor I never did really warm up to.
Okay.
He came to the kitchen. He said, "Who made the rabbit?" I said, "I did." He said, "It was fantastic."
I'd like to say one thing that just occurred to me that Paul said to us one time, all of us waitresses, he got us around, and he said, "You know, it's very seldom you get to be part of something that makes a difference. And he said, we've made a difference.
And he continued to make a difference.
Yeah.
That he carried that on until the very, very end of his life. He was always making a difference in people's lives.
That's right. You know, as remarkable as my story is and Sandy's story is, and, you know, I mean, my story is really remarkable, what he did for me. And the thing to understand about Paul is this is just one of thousands of stories. One thing Paul really respected and admired in a person was your willingness to work hard to achieve something, no matter who you were. Whether you were a tap dancer in the streets of the French Quarter, working, sweating, trying to make some extra money, or whether you were a young cook with aspirations to make a career of it, he would give you a chance. And if you applied yourself, you were rewarded. And that's the way he works. And most of the stories of Paul making a difference in people's lives we'll never know. But I want to share one with you, if I can get through it. One day I was in purchasing, and a lady walked in off the street, and she said, would you like to buy my crab meat? And I said, well, you know, we get crab meat from a couple of different wholesalers. What do you got? She pulled out a Ziploc of jumbo lump crab meat, and it was pretty. And I said, how much do you want for that? She said, $5. At the time, the market was about $9 a pound. So I said, well, let's go see Chef. He was in his test kitchen. So I brought her back to meet Chef. I left them to talk. And from then on, we started buying her crab meat twice a week. And she would bring it in, drop it off with me, and then go in the test kitchen and see Paul to get paid. And no one else saw this, but I did. He would reach into his pocket, pull out a wad of cash, and pay her. And then every time she came in, he peeled off an extra 100 or two and put that in her pocket, too. Well, the story is this lady was the wife of a crabber, and her husband had hurt his back and couldn't work. So she was buying crabs from their crabber friends, steaming them in her home kitchen, and she and the kids would sit around the kitchen table picking crab meat to survive. Paul took good care of her.
Well, Paul took good care of everybody who came into his life, and we are all the better for having had that Paul Prudhomme in the world with us as long as we did. Thank you all so much for sharing these stories with me today.
Thank you, Poppy. It was a pleasure.
Good cooking, good eating, good loving.
Yeah, you're right.
Sandy Hansen and Chef Frank Brightston, remembering the great chef, Paul Prudhomme.